Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Spoke, the all-new and exclusive podcast series with me, Chidera, a.k.a. The Slum Flower.
And me, Sully Breaks, poet, writer, spoken word, artist, etc., etc.
Where we discuss issues at the heart of youth culture and how music and literature are shaping the conversation.
Throughout history, famous men have abused their power and been forgiven for their crimes on account of their art. Take Charles Dickens, a man who's arguably one of the greatest authors of all time, but also an abusive husband. Or Dr. Dre, undoubtedly a hip-hop legend, but also a man with a history of violence against women. Or more recently, R. Kelly, an artist with a long list of suspected crimes who recently released a track called I Admit, attempting to brush over his offences and return to the spotlight.
Although we've seen some industry figures held to account in the wake of the hashtag MeToo and Time's Up movements, there are many other high-profile celebrities who've been able to retain a loyal following despite their well-known controversies. So why are some celebrities immune from criticism while others are cancelled? Is a fall from grace really punishment enough for their crimes? And what should you do as a fan when you discover that someone you rate has disappointed you?
This week, we discuss fallen icons in the wake of Me Too and the problems you face as a fan when separating the art from the artist.
Okay, so this one is a mad one because...
It's a crazy one, crazy one.
Because like that last sentence about separating the art from the artist like makes me so vexed.
Really?
Well, yeah, because why... Like, if you're making art... And that art is coming from a person who has a history of violence or is a known aggressor, then me supporting your art by giving you money or giving you attention or giving you anything that can allow your career to, I guess, expand, is me contributing to your livelihood, which is in a way me allowing you to be in a position that's comfortable enough for you to enact more of the same violence. So in a way, I'm still enabling you.
Is that really the case, though, when we look at it from the context of, like, as humans, we're flawed, innit? Do you understand what I'm saying? Nobody's going to be perfect. I think even as an audience, for us to inherently expect or impose responsibility on artists is completely naive, do you understand what I'm saying? Because yeah. Although someone may be... Like, even if you look at political figures, you know what I mean? People that have contributed to social change and, like, in positive ways,
yeah.
When you look into their history, there's a lot of, like, underlying, like, deep, dark kind of secrets that wouldn't necessarily be things you advocate for. Do you know what I'm saying? So I feel like inherently, as an artist, although you're making art, doesn't mean it makes you a good person. Do you know what I'm saying? And that's the dynamics of being human. You know what I mean? Just because you went and fed like 1,000 kids in a country like in Ghana or something like that, doesn't mean you come home and treat your wife or your child with the same respect. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So do we then, and I'm not justifying it, but I'm saying the conversation is, do we then minimise or discredit their contribution towards the other lives which they're impacting in maybe a positive way?
Well, it's also heavily dependent, I think, as well on the impacts that they're creating. But ultimately, it still comes down to, if you're going to be creating all that goodness in the world, that needs to be reflected in your immediate environment. And those personal values can't just be performative.
Does it have to be though? Because your art, say for instance, if you're an artist that makes music about making people sing and dance and jump about, and you're not necessarily advocating for like, I beat women, so I'm going to go into my art and talk about beating women. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Of course not.
So it's kind of like, isn't the art like a distinct, separate kind of representation of you?
You know, well, I'm really excited to get into this conversation, I could go back and forth with you about this forever, because we've got two incredible people that have joined us today. We are very grateful to have their company.
Yes.
You've got to introduce yourself, and I want you to say one thing that you've done that you're really, really proud of. So on my left, we've got the delightful, the talented, the unforgettable Thea Gajic.
Hi.
How you doing, girl?
I'm good.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, I'm Thea Gajic. I'm an actress, filmmaker, writer. One thing I'm proud of. I think I'm most proud of accepting my other talents.
Which are?
Because for a long time I thought I was solely an actress. And until I started making film, which actually was birthed out of my frustrations of being an actress and not having an agent at the time. And it's scary to admit that you can do other things and put your efforts and time in other things when you thought you were just one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think accepting that allows you to fulfill your potential.
Mm.
And you can block yourself a lot by like not wanting to go down a certain path, because you're so stuck in your head that you want to be one thing. So I'm proud of doing that.
Yes.
We champion that with you as well. that we champion that, definitely. I like that. And to my right, we have the man himself. We have the myth, you know, that came straight from the abyss, you know what I'm saying? The writer extraordinaire, you know what I mean? The wizard with the pen, you know, the speaker.
Jeez.
The speaker extravagance, you know what I'm saying? She extravagant, you know? We have the man himself, a guy I'm a very big fan of personally, Anthony Anaxaguru. Do you want to introduce yourself to the people and introduce it well? Let them know who you really are.
Thanks. Yeah. My name is Anthony Anaxaguru. I'm a poet, a writer, a teacher or educator, and a publisher.
Nice. You're an epic performer. I actually witnessed you deliver a really unforgettable performance at Oxford University.
That's what you were speaking about.
Yeah, okay. When I said I saw you at Oxford, because right. It was me, you, Adjoa, Boa,
yeah,
do you remember?
Yeah. Okay,
yeah, but I remember the piece that you performed, and I think it was just really, really wonderful how you managed to capture the room and you made everyone think. I remember me and Adjoa were like, oh, he's so sick.
When he speaks, the room goes silent, isn't it? There's the first two lines.
Yeah.
After the first two lines, everyone's just silent, bro.
Yeah, Adjoa was gassed, and I was like, right, he's sick, innit?
No. This guy has a way with words on another level, man. Speaking of way with words, what's your responsibility with your words? This is the question we're having. Who's the most problematic artist on your playlist, or most problematic film director or actor that you're a fan of right now, and you feel like they have certain issues that would change the way people perceive them?
I think this is it's a difficult and it's a complicated question to answer. There isn't really one clear avenue that you can go down with this. I think what this argument or this kind of level of inquiry is predicated on is morality, and morality as a concept. Mm. And I think this is where we have to be quite kind of specific in the way in which we think about morality. I think there's two things within the constructs of art and the function of art and morality, and how those two things are intertwined. I think the first thing to think about is the role of the audience and the role of the consumer. Why do people go to art? What is the reason of going to art? So if we take the opposite of morality within the artistic kind of construct or within the artistic spectrum, comedy is premised on subverting morality. So there's a difference between an immoral joke and a tasteless joke, which is what Frankie Boyle says, right? So I think that when audiences go to comedy, they don't go as moralists. When an artist makes art, this is where it goes the other side now. So you have artists who, someone like Kanye West, who will make art. The art doesn't necessarily have to come from a moral high ground. And that is well within the artist's right to not have to moralise, to not be a moralist. Mm. Charles Bukowski, a poet, was not a moralist. They made art because the world in all its facets is not predicated on morality. This is a human concept that has actually changed over time. Mm. If you went back 150 years, slavery was moralised.
Yeah, right? It was even legal.
It was legal and moralised. So, and if you go back even further, the Bible, the Curse of Ham, etc. So I think that if you look at different periods, morality changes. Law isn't even predicated on morality.
Yeah.
There was a shift in the early 20th century that moved from the natural, from like, you know, the religious law into the more objective, kind of logical positivism, things like this. So I think that you have to be quite careful with the way in which you think about morality and the function and the role of the artist, because we don't always have to make art. I mean, we have problems with Kanye West, yet you'll still dance to a tune a nightclub. So I think, where do we actually draw the line? And there are gradations as well. You know, there's one thing, saying something that is quite problematic. There's another thing, sexually assaulting someone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they shouldn't be conflated as the same thing. They're all obviously terrible acts, but they shouldn't be lumped in as in being one thing. So I think really what this argument is very much premised on is, one, the person's own experience. So if a woman who has been raped has to listen to a rapper or a music mogul or a film producer who has raped, they won't be able to moralise or legitimise the acts of that person, whereas a man or a woman who hasn't been affronted or hasn't been affected by something are going to experience things in quite a different way. So I think a lot of it is that subjective experience of an individual, and the other part is our own moral compass and how we navigate art through using that moral compass.
I feel like we can end the podcast now. Let's go home. You know what I mean? So on that concept, I'm going to address it to Fia and then we can bring it back to you. So in that, is there any artist that you feel, that you ever feel like you listen to and there is that, because of your personal experience, there is that conflict? Personally, you feel conflicted on the basis that there's something that doesn't sit with me, and is there artists that you've quote unquote like written off because of that?
Yeah, I think when I was thinking about this topic, I kind of wanted to challenge myself and not pick someone like easy, like Chris Brown, for example, whose music I don't really like anymore anyway. So it's kind of easy for you to quote unquote, discard them, cancel them, whatever.
He's not making the bangers anymore.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Or like even Weinstein, do you know what I mean? He's a producer, so of course he has produced great films, but him as a person, you don't really connect with him because he's a producer. You don't see, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was thinking of people that would challenge me and my perspective. So I was thinking of Johnny Depp and
That's actually a good one.
Kevin Spacey. Whose talents as actors, Johnny Depp specifically, since I was young, before like I was exposed to all the other actors, like I always thought he was like, oh my god, Johnny Depp's the best.
He's one of the best, undisputed.
I know that his situation with Amber Heard kind of split the industry a lot, on like people didn't know who
to
believe.
His ex-wife, right?
Yeah, his ex-wife. So they met on the set of Rum Diary, and there's been allegations of an abusive relationship, etc. And I started like questioning myself, and I was like, it's similar to what you were saying about, if you can't relate to the effects of it, it's really difficult to then like disregard them and what you enjoy about them or their work as an artist. Like, would I not go and see, if he had a new film coming out and it had great reviews, would I really not go and see it? I think I would go and see it, which is then like, oh. So
unapologetically, would you go and see it, or would you the whole time be thinking, "Whoa, like I'm"?
I think it would. It was cross my mind when I'm watching it, like. But I think I would go and see it, which is then is like you question yourself, like, okay, you can say all of this stuff. I think a lot of us are like contradictory.
Yeah.
When it's about ourselves. Like, we can speak on topics. No, I wouldn't do this. I wouldn't do that. And then when you're in the position, you definitely do it.
Yeah.
And then Kevin Spacey, I was part of Old Vic for a long time. So I acted there. I was part of Old Vic New Voices and a community company. And he really changed that theatre for the better. So he was there for, I think, 11 years.
Oh, wow.
And he made it popular. He changed it. Like, he brought it out of the dirt. Like, he gave £10 tickets to, like, people who couldn't afford theatre. He created like this amazing platform for young people in theatre. I was part of a mentorship that he created. So I was one of the actresses that was chosen to be partnered with another actress and so on and so on. This was obviously before his allegations came out. And then again, what you were saying earlier, you question, like what role is that? Can you separate the art from the person and how they've helped so many people in this way? Even though they've harmed whoever.
Other people, yeah.
And when I was researching this, I found an article about Kevin Spacey, because he got recast from a film called All the Money in the World. So he was the main character. Not the main character, so he was the granddad. And they shot the whole film. It's a Ridley Scott film. They shot it all. The trailers were in cinemas. Then the allegations came out. And so then Ridley Scott recast Christopher Plummer instead, and they had to reshoot it in 10 days. Anyway, when I was reading the article, and Ridley Scott, like, I've got a quote here, which is my thing that I
which is your
in.
Item.
Yeah, yeah, okay, cool. We're going to items thought, then. That's cool.
Which
I
thought,
that.
Like, was interesting. So he said, this is Ridley Scott quote, "Whatever you do in private is not my business. It only becomes my business if it infects the business that I'm in. Okay. Then it's my duty to do something about it." So his whole point was saying that he didn't necessarily remove Kevin Spacey for moral reasons. Mm. It was more because
it's gonna affect his money.
So if it would affect his money and it affects the film industry and it affects films that people are trying to sell, do you know what I mean? Time is money. Film is very expensive. Mm. So then it made me think, so how much of this Me Too movement is that?
Mm. Oh, okay, that's a good point. Yeah.
Interesting angle.
That's a very good point. How much of it is really incentivized, but by commercial gain, as opposed to actual social kind of like conscious like outrage?
How many people are co-signing it? How many directors? How many producers are like, no, you're right. Cool. They might also be for moral reasons, but how many of it is because they know if they keep these people in their stuff, they'll lose money? Like Netflix lost so much money
because
they took because of House of Cards. Do you know what I mean? So that quote, like, if I hadn't read that article, I would have presumed he removed Kevin Spacey for
reasons.
Yeah, I would have believed that until I read it, and then I was like, oh.
I guess part of that is because there must have been a sense of pressure.
Sound a bit after pressure.
Pressure. Yeah. There was a lot of pressure. There was a sense of pressure to I guess align with that. Mm. It's very similar to what happened with Joe Radar Radio.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. So similar to what happened at Radar. I had a show at Radar and a lot was happening. People started leaving, but I know that a lot of people who left, they left because if you had remained in that environment, it now just looks bad on you because so many people have left.
Yep.
So then I was now thinking, like, is this person leaving because they care deeply about the initial reason why the first people who left, or are they leaving because if they don't leave, they're going to look like a bad person, and that's going to affect the way that people view them?
Mm.
So it's a difficult one, because what happened, ironically, was that one of the people who announced that they left was actually an abuser.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And but their announcement was that they're saying that they're leaving because of the abusive environment. And I'm like, this is jokes.
Yeah.
But it's a difficult one. And I'm quite conflicted as well, because I operate in an industry that is, you know, there's publishing on this side, and there's like me working with people that do campaigns and stuff. It's just a lot. And I've found in so many situations where it's really hard for me to speak up for myself. Especially, there's been so many instances where I've been on set and my hair's been touched, and everyone in the crew is white, and I'm the talent here. I'm the black woman. If I tell someone off for touching my hair or making like a microaggressive remark, that's now destroyed the entire vibe, and it's now I'm gonna be feeling it the most because I'm the one who needs to work and I'm the talent here. So now everyone feels awkward moving around me. So then I decide to just keep quiet and keep silent. Then I'm thinking, is my silence then enabling for this to happen even longer?
Yeah.
Which then puts me in a very, very difficult position of responsibility. But then leading into like the Me Too movement, I think what's really, really upsetting about that is initially when Me Too was started, one, it was started by a black woman who has dealt with abuse and is trying to give voices to black women who have been abused and unable to speak up. But then the issue is, like you were saying, that when it starts to enter the conversation to do with money, what happens is that people want to look like they are morally on the right side of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me of when, I think there was a red carpet event happening and people had to wear like roses or something.
Yeah.
And it's like that thing again, it's like if you don't wear a rose, then it looks like you don't care.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
then
yeah.
It's like...
But I think a lot of this is assuming that the idea of business or the idea of capitalism or the idea of acquiring and making money is premised on philanthropy and do-gooding, which is not.
It's
like,
true.
That's not a business's modus operandi. Like, their thing is to make money.
Yeah.
And everything else is secondary to that, including things like what we're speaking about.
Yeah.
So to expect the business to act, I mean, ethically, a capitalist model is premised on exploitation.
Yeah, 100%.
Right?
Yeah.
So the whole thing is about...
It's already rigged.
Right. Yeah. So to expect the business to all take like a humane stance on something is ridiculous. But I think the fact that people are getting cancelled, the fact that people are being put out of work, I don't even think it's going to hurt their pocket in that sense, because a lot of these people are very powerful people anyway.
And, yeah, regardless.
Where it does get really interesting is when you compare powerful white men or powerful entertainers to people in prison who most of the people in prison are poor. Like, yeah. I do a lot of work in prison and I see a lot of the guys that are in there for the same reason as...
That's a good point.
The person that was cancelled.
Right. And that is both a form of cancelling, but the difference is that the people with power and money have still got their autonomy.
Enjoy their privileges.
No one's gone to prison.
No.
Yeah.
But these guys have. So you look at, again, you look at law, you look at the judicial system and how that plays out with power, money, race, class, etc. And you start to realise there's something a lot more insidious at play here. There's something a lot more profound than just somebody doing something wrong and then getting pulled up for it.
We're looking at the situation from a standpoint that the people in this industry or the industry itself doesn't have like a responsibility to.
Has it got a moral backbone?
Yeah.
What items did you bring?
I didn't bring any items. I got a quote.
Yeah, that's an item.
I thought you had like a material.
No.
Just what fits into the conversation.
Man, look, like, I'm not a purist.
What's a purist?
Like a purist, somebody who is a Puritan. Like everything is... If I was a purist, I wouldn't live in this country. Right, I'm not going to start judging people in this kind of sense when I live in a country and I pay tax towards a government that props up Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Like that, you can't, it's impossible.
Yeah.
So I think that you have to see things as they are. And it's all very well and good to try and say, you know, like, I'm no longer supporting this because of that.
Yep.
But then there's other things at play as well. You know, you can boycott this, but then what happens over here?
Yep.
Yeah.
So I think the system is so complicated and it's so interwoven with exploitation, with corruption, with genocide, with arms fed, like all this kind of thing, that for me, I see individuals as human beings before I deify them. So I'm not looking for a saviour. I'm not looking to put somebody like a celebrity on a pedestal and think you are the beacon, the paragon of excellence. You are... They're all good.
Yeah,
yeah.
People are fallible.
Right? Yeah,
and I think because of that fallibility, we have to understand that art is something that you do. It's a verb. It's something that you make, right? Mm-hmm. So a human, you might be very like Einstein, might have been great, you know, at quantum physics, but then when it comes to like raising a child, he wasn't very good.
Yeah, terrible. Yeah,
or
man,
cooking.
Yeah.
You know, or something like this. Like intelligence and artistry and gifts and the idea of the extraordinary individual.
Mm.
These things are almost channeled to become one thing. So we remove the fact that Kevin Spacey is a great actor, also a perpetrator.
Mm.
And those two things somehow... But look at the rest of that person's life and the rest of what it constitutes to be a human being. And you start to see that we are all problematic in our own ways. And some obviously more than others. But
absolutely.
The fact is that... We're all here playing our part. So I genuinely, what I try and do, can you separate the dancer from the dance, which is kind of what we're getting at here.
Yeah.
I someone like Philip Larkin, right? He's a
Philip
poet. He was a poet.
And when we say elaborate for the people that are listening.
So Philip Larkin was a poet that was around in the 50s, 60s, 70s, like the modernist poet in that kind of period. And he was an English guy from Hull. And he wrote a very famous poem called The Whitsun Weddings. And it's one of my favourite poems of all time. Philip Larkin also, in 1984, said he doesn't want to go to test matches anymore because there's too many effing N-words around and that the South African police squad should come and sort them out. He was a Thatcherite, he was classist, he was racist, and all this is documented. Yet he's lauded, he's lionised, he's respected within literary circles. Why? Because he can write a mean poem, but he was also a fascist, like an outspoken fascist. He hated poor people. He hated them. And so I think with people, what do you do? Do you cancel his work or do you see it for this is the work of a fascist? Ezra Pound, he was writing with Mussolini. You know, he wrote some of the most famous cantos of the Second World War, yet he was a fascist.
So let me ask you this then. You have a publishing house, yeah?
Yeah.
You have a platform. Mm. So if an artist approached you and you knew that they had very, like, offensive, you know, kind of like...
very dark history.
Yeah, views, you know, and things that you didn't outwardly agree with, but you knew that their art was of a high standard and it was of a level that you would champion irrespective of... if you wasn't aware of their circumstance, would you feel a responsibility, a moral responsibility, not to give that a platform or wider reach? Or would you say, this is just good work and let me take it for what it is?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I come from a moral place. And I think that how it works is that I have a moral compass and I navigate the world using that compass. However, I don't know how conducive being censorious actually is.
What does censorious mean?
So to censor somebody, censor. To cancel. Okay. So I think that for me... Philip Larkin, Ted Hughes, Bukowski, Ezra Pound, Eliot, all these poets who were problematic, the Chris Browns, the Kanyes, you know, you go Kevin Spacey, you go all the way down the line. Let people know what they've done and use that to build on the future. Okay. That's how you move forward. You don't hide from it. You don't sanitize it. You don't say, no, we lived in a... You say, this is what we're going to use now to build on, to move on and to work forward. And that has to exist because we live in a fascistic society. There are people out there. I mean, you can see in the UK alone, from Brexit all the way through to Tommy Robinson, you see the whole thing, how it plays out. So to deny that that exists, that that body politic exists, is in itself counterproductive to what it is we're trying to do. So no, I wouldn't publish them. And I would ask them to not be involved in the arts. Yeah, I know poets, contemporaries of mine, who are racist, who are writing racist. I'm not going to name them.
Yeah,
but I, you know, there's people that are operating right now who are the same age as me and are writing very racist poems. Be they, like, you know, steeped in metaphor, whatever else. They're a problem. Yet they have publishing deals with, you know, major publishing houses. So I think it's important to recognize these things for what they are and have the conversation, you know, but have it conducively as opposed to this kind of very polarizing way in which we do politics. We have to do everything.
So if we're discussing, I want to address this to you, Fia. So if we're discussing in the same way, like same way I was talking to Anthony about talking about art and put it on a platform, even though, you know, the person is problematic and that they are flawed. So as a producer and a director, in your personal experience, have you come across a situation where you had to draw that moral...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Standard that is that you hold yourself to in order to get art produced, because I mean, especially as an independent filmmaker, you have very limited resources as it is. So say someone comes onto the set and like the Radar Radio situation, they may have a background that is questionable, but they're the best actor for the job. Is it still, do you still, because I think, like you said, we operate in a business. Does the business aspect still affect what you need to do versus what you want to do?
Yeah, it definitely affects it. I've never personally been in that situation.
So but, hypothetically, if he was, would you, you know what I mean? Imagine, say for instance, a massive Hollywood producer says, I'm giving you $1 million to make a movie, but you have to cast Spacey because he's on his comeback tour and you're the only director that will make it. And like you said, you still go to the cinema to watch his films. Are you a hypocrite by then saying, no, but I have this standard, or are you just being business orientated?
I wouldn't cast him.
From a commercial reason or for a personal reason?
I don't know. I think it's a bit of both, to be honest. I think...
It's such hard territory.
I know, it's just hard. Like, really I don't... Hard. It is, like, I understand when I read the Ridley Scott quote, but even though I hadn't...
But Ridley Scott's problematic.
No, he's problematic himself. Yeah.
Let's not use him as 100%.
But just his quote when he was talking about the business side of it, and obviously, as we know, as we've spoken about, business and capitalism isn't moral and it doesn't spawn from those grounds. But yeah, I wouldn't, because also I think a lot of it, I think it is personal as well because of how Kevin Spacey went about when he got found out and how and the statement he released afterwards.
How did he handle it?
In his apology, he used it to come out as gay.
Oh.
Instead of...
To garner sympathy instead of to address what he'd done.
Yeah, exactly.
So he tried to get support from another oppressed group to try and, like, to try and alleviate the pressure on him.
Yeah.
Do you know, there's another element to this that we haven't
let's talk about
There's one other thing is that I often think about the way that the cult of celebrity is kind of contained and the way in which they're spoken about. And it's all this kind of extraordinary, almost superhuman talent that they have.
Yeah.
And that eclipses anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we look at the guy in prison from, I don't know, Walthamstow, and he's doing 6 years, right? Mm. He can't act, he can't sing, he can't dance, can't write poems, whatever else, right? Mm. As far as we know, he deserves to be in prison.
Yeah.
This person can act incredibly well. They've raped and assaulted several women.
Mm. But they're an entertainer, so...
There it is, but they have a talent.
Mm. Yeah.
But is the argument for their talent or is it their impact? Because this is the question you have to ask.
It's the same thing. Talent is impact.
I don't feel like it's the same
thing. It's how it's valued and how it's received by groups of people.
It's like how we respond to beautiful people, right? It's like how beauty is used as a way to basically, the more beautiful you are, the better you're treated, and the more you're able to escape certain things. Basically, the more beautiful you are, the more value you have as a person. In the same way, the more talented you are, the more value you have as a person.
But if we look at it, that's one way to look at it. But if we're talking about, say, someone's beautiful, like, it makes people feel better, innit? So that's, like, to an extent, someone likes to being, like, appreciated by a beautiful person. They like the how it makes them feel, because they feel like if they're beautiful and they like me, that's an emotional response. So the same way Thea was talking about how Kevin Spacey paid for this theatre, did this, did that, you know what I mean? Same way we can say that Kanye West provides jobs for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a very practical impact, and people are saying that, like you said, he helped pay for, like, make the theatre accessible. We're trying to say does that not kind of atone them? Because we're talking about the subject of redemption.
I don't think it does.
Does that not create some kind of atonement if you balance the scales, like Gandhi, for instance?
Because
Gandhi was a prick.
No, I don't. I'm not a fan of. I mean, Nas said it for me. Gandhi was a fool. You know what I mean? So already, I have my opinions of him.
Nas has got a lot of issues.
Of course,
right?
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Look, I think the point is that when you look at atonement and you look at this kind of notion that Kanye West creates a lot of jobs, that does that allow him? Does that justify him supporting Trump?
What does atonement mean?
To kind of redempt, to kind of forgive, that kind of, yeah.
But isn't that your own personal stance then? By you 100%, saying
everything is your personal. That's why I said this is about subjectivity.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
What about this idea of what we spoke about, just to backtrack a bit, we spoke about how we're very quick to excuse and pardon certain individuals. Mm. And if we think about it in a more selfish way, one of the reasons I think it is because that person's symbolic representation, what they symbolise for us as individuals. So if you take it back to before the cult of celebrity and you look at kings and queens you go back even before that and you look at prophets and deities and whatever else, the purpose was to project our inadequacies, our fantasies, our dreams and our desires onto these individuals, right? Be they omnipotent or be they human.
Yeah.
And I think that what we do with celebrities now is using glamour, using marketing, smoke and mirrors, PR campaigns, whatever else, we create the idea of the indestructible superhuman. Mm. That's what the cult of celebrity is about. And so the moment that you cancel one of these individuals, you are now cancelling the aspirations, the hopes and dreams, the symbolism of so many groups of people, which is why they're very quick to defend. Whereas the guy who's in Walthamstow in prison, he doesn't represent anything for anyone.
Yeah.
Right? He just gets lumped in this category of criminal. We don't care what it 100. Is. You're just a criminal. That's where you go. And so there's all these discussions and think pieces and hot takes on, you know, on Kevin Spacey's and actors and footballers, Ronaldo
See?
So I think that, we have to see this as a wider thing, not just the individual, but what that individual represents and why we're quick to want to either ameliorate or go the other way.
Mm. Do you reckon this is just a male problem? Because I'm curious about our relationship with Azealia Banks. Mm-hmm. Who, for those that know, she's a musician, and she's also known for just being really, really she's quite confrontational about a lot of topics, but at the same time, she's got a really smart head on her. But a lot of the time, she does say a lot of homophobic things, transphobic things, but then she still is upheld a lot by so many communities, including the gay community as well. And I see a lot of people saying things like, we've decided to cancel Azealia Banks, but this tune kind of goes in, though. So I think the question I'm asking is, like, in what ways is it different for women?
Sabrina Claudio.
Oh, yes, Sabrina Claudio. So for those who don't know, Sabrina Claudio is a young musician. I think she's about 20 or 21. Mm-hmm. And I think she is, yeah, she's Cuban. Very, very fair-skinned. And so what happened was her tweets got pulled up from when she was about 16, 17, where she was being extremely racist and attacking black women on the internet and being fatphobic as well. And so the internet collectively decided to cancel her.
But this is the issue with call out culture.
Yeah.
Like, I have a, and I get, you know, this is a controversial topic. Like, you saw it with Maya Jama as well. Like, you see it with Stormzy. Like, there's a lot of this whole, Twitter loves a pile on.
Yeah.
And Twitter doesn't need anything substantial to actually try you know, deduce why this thing happened. And again, it's the idea that people can't grow.
Yeah.
We've all said stupid stuff.
Yeah.
Like, everyone has said something stupid in their time and acted in stupid ways. Some people aren't learning in public.
Some are learning in private.
Some are learning in private.
Lucky for them.
Absolutely. And I think that we have to take that into consideration, you know, that someone when they're 17 and all the stuff that's kind of gone into that experience of being a 17-year-old mixed race girl or whatever it is, and then someone when they're in their mid-20s or 30s or 40s, they're not the same person.
Right. Also, like, I've always said, when with this whole Twitter cancelling culture of bringing up old tweets, like, the world has changed so much. Things that were politically correct
100% different.
Are not politically correct now. Yeah, and it's a constant change, and we as a society decide how to change the meaning of words.
Yeah,
do you know
100%.
What I mean? And we decide all the time, constantly evolving, how we do that and what's allowed and what's fine now and what wasn't then. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I think we still have to be quite meticulous with the way in which we think about political correctness.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is, like, overt homophobia,
racism,
and overt sex.
Of course.
Is what it is. I think, like you say, microaggressions and the vocabulary around certain things, mm-hmm. there's more discourse now than what there was 10, 15 years ago mm-hmm. because of the proliferation of technology, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you definitely have to see that, but then also understand, like we were just saying, that this is a learning experience for everyone. Like, you look at Russell Brand's trajectory, he was 10 years ago to where he is now. He's a different person. Malcolm X.
Yeah,
you know, like, you go through and you'll see that some people just do their learning in public.
Mm-hmm.
We think of things as this
black
kind
and
of
white.
This monolith.
Yeah.
Like, it's all like
you're
crime.
You're either righteous or you are.
Yeah, like, I don't think there's at all space to grow in public and to make mistakes in public. Like, do you know what I mean?
Really hard.
It is not a safe
space. Because the media is predicated on shame.
Yeah.
Yes. Like,
that's a good point.
People love a story where someone gets
shamed.
Yeah.
Someone gets called out.
The best story is someone who's known for being positive and has very clean views, and then something is brought up and it's like, aha! Yeah. It's like in cartoons it's like in Scooby-Doo when you remove the person's mask and it's like, aha! Yeah.
If it wasn't for you meddling kids.
But you know what? If we were to even think about these things in a more critical way, then we're going to start losing this very tabloid way of receiving information and thinking about people, because on the other end of that scandal there's a human being. Now, make it clear, like, I'm not trying to pardon people who have done heinous crimes.
Yeah, 100%.
It's just you know, human beings who F up at some point in their journey and aren't forgiven. And that's what I'm saying, like, to think about things in that way, to not lump a serial killer in there with a petty thief. Like, they're not the same thing.
Yeah.
You know? They both fall under crime, but there's gradations. What about the white collar boys in the city? Who's gone to prison? Who's gone to prison for what happened, you know, with the banking crisis?
No one. Not a single banker.
No one. What happened to Grenfell? What happened to Grenfell? Who's gone to prison for Grenfell?
Yeah.
But someone will go to prison for nicking Skittles.
Yeah.
We'll
talk. Let's talk about the subject. Now we're on the subject of growth and, like, humanity and people. So at what point does someone get to a place of redemption? At what point are we allowed to do we give people the opportunity to, like, revolve or move past that? Because we have Dre here as an example, where when he's known as having an abusive relationship towards women, and he's openly admitting to it.
Who's that?
Dr. Dre.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's openly, on multiple occasions, admitted to it, and he's actually come out and saying, I've paid the price. And as a result of that, I take it more from his personal experience, meaning that he knows how that's affected his relationships, maybe with those women or other people, or how people perceive him. But as a public or society, when do we get to the point where it's like, okay, you know what? Not necessarily we forgive you, but okay, we're not going to use this to kind of like, to demonize you for the rest of your life. Because it's kind of, that's kind of how it is right now. If you get seen, unless you have a certain level of celebrity, if you get something associated with you, you're carrying that from now to your grave, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's also like how the information is learned, because if it's from the person's mouth, like for example, I heard Dre talking about it in the Defiant ones.
Yeah. Mm.
And when you hear the person talking about it and how they're describing, they know that it was wrong at the time and this is what they've gone through and now they've learned and now they've gone on this journey, it's more difficult to then want to cancel them.
Yeah, it's different when it's different when like revealed.
Yeah, it's different
secret
when it's revealed to when like someone's telling you that their past and telling you how they've changed and so, how they've grown. I think that differs. But and in terms of like people that don't have legendary status, it's like I find it really difficult and I always feel quite sorry for them, because when people, something's happened and it's been pulled up on the internet and they're trying to apologise, like, they can't
gets
ever drunk. Get
your
it right.
Your apology it's gets like, demonised.
Yeah,
like, you didn't apologise properly.
You'll
start again.
It's like, oh, yeah, you apologised in your notes. Bruv, what do you mean?
What else are people... Should I do a video?
I know, like, I don't understand.
Webcam,
so it's like, it's,
1080.
I don't know. I don't know when society decides to forgive people if it isn't that high status.
Do you know what it is though? I think you've made an important point, because it's reflective of our own relationship with self-forgiveness though.
Yeah.
Because it reaches a point where it's like, okay, how would you like me to show that I am sorry for what I've done and that I've learned? Because I actually need to live through this experience and allow my lesson to actually manifest in me.
Yeah.
Like, how do you prove that you've learned your lesson?
Yeah.
But then I think to myself, like, is Dr. Dre a moralist? Has Dr. Dre ever come from a moral place, or is he coming from a place of commentary? You know, like, I am, this is who I am. I am from this place. Whereas a politician,
that's a responsibility.
That's a responsibility. You have influence, you have power, you have direct, you can legislate. That's a difference from somebody getting on a microphone and saying, F the government, or F the system. Like, that's very different. Bob Marley, again, another very problematic character.
So
I think that whichever way you cut it, like, you will always, and you're right, there is definitely something within this gender issue, is the fact that this is very common amongst men. This is part of the patriarchy. This is part of what, you know, male supremacy, this is what it affords people. And if you compare that to problematic women, you'll find it difficult to even try and pick 10.
Yeah.
It's just one of these things. It's inbuilt within the system, and men are taught to behave and to be able to get away with certain things. And then the more powerful you become, the more you can push those things out.
Push them on,
I feel like the internet is such a dark place. I remember back in 2015, 2014, I saw 2018 coming. I knew that people are going to start doing this thing where they will type in your handle and type a particular term next to it to find something. So I downloaded a program called like Martani or something like that. And I just went through my archive, deleted all my old tweets from when I was like 15, 16 years old, because that's not the person I am now.
Yeah.
And I knew that the social landscape was very different back then, where the way to bond with people was banter and cussing people's mums. Being an absolute idiot. And now that I know that it was wrong, I just imagine constantly, what if those old tweets got pulled up now and how people would...
Okay, let's wrap it up. But I think with us talking about this subject, and you just addressed something that you felt like when you was young, you know, you went and you're extremely like regretful for, and you'd want to make atonements for it, and you're happy that you was able to rectify that. Is end it with talking about something that maybe this is your opportunity to kind of like talk about something that you said in the past, or maybe something that you put online that you really regret. One of the things I really regret being in a situation, I remember when I was like, maybe I was like 20, 21, 22. I can't remember how old I was, maybe like 20. But at the same time, I was not as open my understanding when I wrote a poem about abortion. And I look back and I'm thinking, like, no one had to tell me that. I look back and look back. Why would I even think it'd be okay to discuss a subject like that? Do you understand what I'm saying? But this is me coming from years of understanding it, mainly from, like, upbringing, do you understand what I'm saying? Or mainly from a male perspective as well, and saying that this is right, this is wrong. But as growing, and it's not only just educating yourself. It's really just experiencing life. You realise mm-hmm. that there's certain discussions that there's multifaceted and there's so many things that you can't just put into a poem yep. and say right, wrong. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yep. And that, I mean, like, that's probably one of the most embarrassing things I've ever done. And I've never
but you
come
learnt
out,
from it.
And I've never come out publicly and said, like you said, people learn. I've never come out publicly and said, I shouldn't have done that. That's one of the things was like, wow, if I had opportunities, like,
you wouldn't have
I'd remove all evidence of it online, but I'm sure it's still floating around somewhere. But
no, yeah, like, I definitely, like, wiped all tweets.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even that, and it was mainly around because, like, I'm sure we all know, like, we all use the word gay.
Yeah.
Back in the day, yeah, in a completely different context. Yeah. It wasn't even anything to do with gay people. It was just.
It was just. Right, it was just. Gay fam.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So obviously, looking back on my tweets, I was like, oh, I know I didn't mean it in a disrespectful way, but obviously the word meant something different to like youth then. And I remember like being on a bus. Maybe last year, and there was like a group of teenagers on a bus, and they used "gay" in the context that that we used to use it. And I remember like, and they was talking loud, and they said it loud, like, "Oh, that's gay, fam," or whatever they said. And like, my whole body was, sunk, and I was like, "Oh my god, like, is this really what we was doing? Like, is this really how we were speaking?"
Yeah.
And do you know what I mean? Everything. And my mum's a teacher, and I remember when she. It was like a while ago now, but I remember when she said that like it had been brought into schools that they banned the word used in that context kind of thing. And then it just made me like realise like it wasn't always banned though in that context. Like it was really...
It was normal. It was
normal
like,
and it was really allowed. And it's weird because I don't consciously remember when the shift happened for me.
Yeah.
But just hearing someone else say it on the bus like a couple of years ago, like I was so offended or whatever by it.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, but I didn't even notice when that shift happened personally.
Yeah.
But
certain,
just us as a society and how, obviously, as you grow up and learn and have different friends, that, it just changes.
I hear that. Anthony, do you want to close us off?
I mean, I don't know how old everyone is here, but I'm 35. Yeah. So I didn't really come onto Facebook and Twitter until I was maybe 27, 28, something like this. So I was quite fortunate in the fact that I'd done all my stupid stuff. Right, like, you know,
offline
basically. Yeah, the internet didn't exist when I was 17, 18. So I'm quite thankful for that. I mean, I've deleted stuff. But I've deleted it because I felt the wording, I haven't framed it right, what I'm trying to say. The only thing that I think I got taught a very quick lesson, and the way that it was done was, for me, the most beautiful way you can teach someone. And it was when Kanye West did Glastonbury and he was using the N-word, and you saw the picture was him in that box, and then all these white folk were just saying the N-word. You could see them mouthing it back. And I think I went on Facebook and I just did this whole thing that, you know, that rappers shouldn't use this word and white people shouldn't be saying it, blah, blah, blah.
And I think I remember.
And then a friend of mine from America, African-American guy, he called me up and he says, "Are you around? You know, I'm going to chop it up." I was like, "Yeah, I'm about." So he goes, "All right, let's go get a drink." So we went and had the drink. And as we were chatting, he said, "I saw the post that you did. So you don't, you know, what are your thoughts?" I said, "Listen, man." And I was quite righteous with it. Like, "This is what I think, blah, blah." And then he was like, "Cool. You're not African-American." And I was like, "Yeah, I know that, man. I'm pretty aware of that." And he goes, "So here's the thing. What that word does within the American context is act as a relief. And only if you are an African American can you fully understand the function of that word." Mm. And just to kind of use it in this kind of way to perform or to posture takes away the essence of what it does. Now, he's saying, look, I'm not trying to say it's right or whether it's wrong. I'm just saying that what he was saying is that it helps us deal with the black experience. Mm. And if that word is needed to deal with the black experience, and he was from Yonkers, you know, like, then that word needs to be there. What you should have said, it should have stopped that white people should not use that word.
Okay. Mm.
That's it. Like, literally, the other discussion is for black folk to have, like, particularly African-Americans. Yeah. It goes, not even black British folk, because this is something that America have exported. Yeah. This is a discourse within that, and there's enough Ta-Nehisi Coates, there's enough James Baldwin commentators who have talked and spoken about the use of the N-word within that context.
Yeah.
And so for me, I never really thought of it as a kind of coping mechanism in that sense of how you deal with white supremacy, of how you deal with, you know, structural oppression and things like this. And it completely changed the way in which I kind of saw language and the way in which some words do act as a... I don't know if you've seen Ta-Nehisi Coates' thing where he talks about overhearing his wife
Talking to her friend a bitch.
And then he was like, why would anyone even have the desire to want to use that word, you know, unless you're a woman, right? So it's, you know, I think this is, for me, this is one of the beauties of, and one of the most kind of deleterious elements of language is the fact that it does create these kind of political discussions. But then, you know, language is political. Like, the whole thing is structured on politics and being inclusive and exclusive and things like this. So I think that for me, that's my takeaway. And that's one of the most kind of profound lessons I learned a few years back on social media. So I'm grateful for that.
Cool, man. It's been a great discussion, man. Thank you both for your time, your contribution, your energy, your enlightenment. Take care. Thank you very much, guys.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.